Accession number 12268, Mr. Charles Biedman, reel 5.
Reel 5. Yes, you were going to tell me about leaving Java after 9 months. Mm. And this would have been sort of late 1942, 43. Yes.
It's probably late 42 because I can remember arriving in Japan in November. They put us onto small coasters. I would think they're possibly something in the region of about 5,000 tons. We got to Singapore, and because they were short of their complement of men, they brought another 30 sick men straight out of the hospital to make up our final complement. And these men were put right down to one of the holds on sand, which was used as ballast for the ship. Well, there were men who had dysentery, etc., so obviously this started things off again. And we had a very slow journey all around the coast. By this time, American submarines had begun to get active, and I suppose even the Air Force was active to quite an extent. So it wasn't an easy matter for the Japanese to move their shipping around, and we were unescorted. There were two ships in our convoy. When we got to Formosa, we put a sick man ashore, a man called Timothy. He was a bombardier, which corresponds to a corporal in the army, and I really felt he was being put ashore to die. Young man, mid-20s, but he had dysentery and malaria and just looked like a skeleton. After the war finished, to my great astonishment, I met Timothy back here at home, looking as fit and hale and hearty as anyone. Because of the risk of submarines, the Japanese began to get a bit bothered about us, about the British, and they became unhelpful, to say the least. They cut water ration down to practically nil, and we were confined inside this ship. The Japanese are very frugal people, basically, and they will waste no space. So they had their joiners put up almost shelves in the hold. So in a 6-foot space, you probably would have 3 layers of men. And when the situation was dangerous, they wouldn't allow men on deck. In fact, they were only allowed on deck for very small intervals. I got a fair amount of privilege, as we still were looking after sick men. We had 2 doctors aboard, and we, in our section, had about 40 sick men. We eventually arrived in Japan, and this was in November, and the weather was quite comparable to a British November. It was sleeting and getting quite cold, and we were in tropical uniform and had a not very easy journey. The men were told they were going off to a coal mine. This was in Kyushu, which is the southernmost island of Japan. We arrived late evening, and as the night wore on, the Japanese told us that we were going on to a hospital ship. And I tried to keep up the morale of the sick man by telling them that after a while we'd all be going on to a hospital ship. But something like 10 o'clock at night, they came to us and told us that there were a lot of sick men up in the bows of the ship. And this doctor, Dr. Campbell, had gone off with any medical orderlies and just left these very sick men, again about 40 of them, with no attention whatsoever. Whether he did this voluntarily or was ordered to do so, I mean, I will never know. I've never met up with them since. And they then told us that we were going to transfer our sick men onto this hospital ship. So we got all our men onto the quayside and had to walk about 3/4 mile to this so-called hospital ship. The majority of the men could walk, so we set off in very slow convoy. And the amazing thing about the Japanese was they never did provide assistance. They didn't provide transport, they didn't provide stretchers, and they wouldn't assist ourselves. I suppose in a sense they regard us as being something like subhuman. When we got to the ship, we found it was just another ship in the convoy. And we were getting into the night, and it was sleeting and raining. And I don't suppose we'd been fed particularly that day. And I remember feeling at very low ebb. When I took the first batch of men up the gangplank on deck, there were something like 17 corpses wrapped in blankets, and the blankets were flapping violently in the wind. And when we went down the deck where the sick men were, it was almost indescribable. Since then, I've never been very worried about hell, because I think I experienced it. The smell was almost indescribable, because there was so much dysentery, and there were these poor people who were British, but mostly Dutch and Dutch Javanese, and virtually dying. And I remember saying to Dr. Barclay, if we don't get off this ship, Alan, in a matter of a day or two, we'll all go. Having taken several groups of men on the ship, we were left with some who really couldn't walk very much. And I remember one of the last men I took aboard just could not walk up the gangplank. So I put him on my back and began to walk up the gangplank with him. Suddenly he slumped, and I swore at him and said, you know, it's hard enough for me to do this job without you making life more difficult. For heaven's sake, keep your weight up. Didn't answer, and I got to the top and he died. And I felt terrible about it. nothing that you could do. And in a sense, at least, he was out of his misery. And I don't suppose he even heard anything that I said to him.
Would you still have been wearing your tropical sort of outfit?
Yes. But you see, you're basically young, so you're sort of strong, put up with all sorts of difficulties. Morale's important. If your morale's good, you live, and if you don't want to live, you die.
It sounds from what you've been saying there, Charles, that your morale was not good at that point.
Well, I mean, it's understandable because, I mean, you've had a long journey and under terrible conditions, really, and you're at a low ebb. And then you're faced with this sort of situation, which is an absolute traumatic shock due to your system. But I'm a resilient person, and, you know, I suppose like most of us, you know, if you get anything like a night's sleep, you know, you wake up the next morning, life's a lot more tolerable.
Would you say that was one of your lowest points as a POW?
Yes, I would think so. Because I really felt, you know, these conditions that it was so full of infection, etc., that we were going to go. Yes, I think so. Most times I was philosophical enough to think ahead to the future.
So where did you go after that, then, having left
the
ship?
Well, they then took us to this YMCA building, which accommodated. There was lots of Christianity in Japan. And I think particularly on Kyushu, the southernmost island. I don't know very much about Japanese religion, Shintoism, but it always seems to be complex, etc. And I would think that today that there are probably masses of Japanese Christians. There's this YMCA building, and if my experience of the ship was heaven, was hell, then my first experience of this YMCA building was heaven, because it was clean. And once again, the joiners had been in and they'd sort of made these shelves for us to sleep in, but there's more room. And then the next day they began to bring the prisoners off the ship. Well, there the Japanese did provide transport because there was no way these men could have walked there.
Would these have been the sick men that you saw?
On the ship. And one of the things that remained with me forever was the great joy of these men when we put them into a communal bath. There was a communal bath in this YMCA building, type of thing you might get in sort of sports ground, etc. And I suppose it would have held about best part 20 men. And we always seemed to have hot water, I suppose mainly because Japan is a very well wooded country. But I still can remember the enormous joy of these sick men when they were put into baths. The enormous joy of a normal person just being clean again. Almost like babies. But they were all sick men, and for some long time they died at the rate of 17 a day. I don't know why I've got this figure in my mind, but I suppose it was so traumatic to me that it just remember that. and the Japanese would bring back a small casket of ashes, which we kept in a separate room for them. The camp held about between 300 and 350, so it was quite small. But I really have seen my fill of death. Those that survived became quite fit. We had kitchens as such, although they were quite primitive, and they were mainly sort of boiling, just used for rice, etc. They worked us very hard indeed. As an example, when we were coaling ship, they'd have 10 men working on any particular ship, and the coal barges were soft screen coal with 100 tons of coal per barge. So that you average 10 tons of coal per barge, and a general day's work was 3 barges, so it was 30 tons of coal per man per day, which would average 3 British truck, railway trucks, railway coal trucks.
Per man?
Per man. This was equally distributed by the men because it was governed by the speed of the winch. The winch would lower baskets which held 3/4 of a hundred. About 3/4 of a ton. And the trick we developed was to dig down as fast as we could to put the basket in, and then you could shovel in from the sides, which just meant virtually pushing it in there. Nevertheless, it was a great deal of work. But again, because of the heavy amount of work that we did, this was good for the prisoners generally, because it kept them healthy, and also you're so tired that when you got back to camp, after you cleaned up, you just slept. I was injured on one of these coal filling exercises because the Japanese, as I said, are frugal people and they don't waste anything. So that when the barge was empty, they would have a sweep the barge and collect any of the loose coal dust and get this into a basket. On one occasion I was doing just this, bending over, when the ship's hook, which weighs about best part of 3/4 of a hundredweight, swung, somebody just let go, and hit me on the head. The blood sort of poured into my eyes. If it had hit me on the temple, it might well have killed me. And I went up onto deck, just clambered up, saw the guard, and told him in Japanese I'd been injured. Could I have some gauze, which he got, and I stemmed it. I went back to camp and had concussion for a few days. And then he punished me sometime later for having the effrontery to tell the Japanese soldier what to do. What happened was that after this severe blow, which affected my eyesight, because it destroyed some nerves around the optic nerve, I was kept in camp. We were having a lot of air raids. The American forces were really, really getting in command of the air. And we'd dug some shelters in the mountains, of which I'll tell you a bit more later on. And we were woken up and taken these air raid tunnels until raids were over. On this occasion, it had gone on almost all night. And I was in the medical inspection room, sitting on the edge of an inspection couch, when I fell asleep. And suddenly the door of the inspection room was pushed open violently by a guard's foot. And there was one of our favourite guards, Pegleg, who came in. I jumped up, but he could see the sleep in my eyes, and he said to me, "You're asleep." And I said, I don't think I answered him. And he said, "You know, prisoners aren't allowed to sleep during the day." Took me out of the guard room, and I stood out there for something like 5 hours, nothing being said. The guard rooms were open affairs, and there was a bench, and there's generally about 3 Japanese soldiers sitting on this bench, just doing their various guard duties. And after this long period of time, the guard changed, and one of the guards was Yagi-san, who'd been on the boat when I received my injury. And some long time had elapsed since then. Incidentally, Yagi in Japanese means goat. And he said to me, he said, Biedman-san. He said, "You know, I've been waiting for this." Because he said, "Do you remember when you got your injury?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "You told me what to do." And he said, "Prisoner never tells the Japanese what to do. And all I'd done was I told him I'd been injured in arteries and gores to stem the bleeding." And then he took hold of my jacket and proceeded to throw me over his shoulders. The Japanese are very keen on jiu-jitsu and karate. And it's not a difficult matter to throw a man when you can grasp him and just bend down and throw him over your shoulder. And they keep repeating this. He was a very strong, stocky individual. And the first 6 or 7 times, you can break your fall. It's not too bad, but they carry on and probably do this for 20 times, by which time you begin to jar almost every bone in your body. And then had me do what would be a handstand, normally, just get down and you hold yourself up on your hands, and if you collapse, they beat you again on your buttocks with a sword until you get up again. So eventually you're sort of stiff and sore, and then they finish this off with sort of hitting you violently on both sides of your mouth. So that in this particular instance, I couldn't eat for a week or so, not comfortably anyway. And I suppose in a sense, a lack of communication. They tended in those days to have an inferiority complex. Felt the Japanese weren't as good as the Europeans. Well, again, as we know, I mean, it's nonsensical, but that's the way they felt. And you're also dealing, in the main, with something like 4th, 5th line troops, and a lot of them weren't very well educated. So they were at odds to prove their own superiority and punish almost anything. Their punishments they gave us, they imposed on their own men. Another quite favourite thing of theirs, if they had a corporate punishment, was to get 5 or 6 men hold out a hardwood bench at arm's length, And if you dropped it at all, I mean, they just beat you violently until you held it up again. So I suppose that the punishment was designed to see that you didn't repeat whatever your particular offence was. Going back to the camp itself.
Yes, you were talking about the work, weren't you?
Yes.
And the coaling. Was there any other sort of work you were doing?
Yes. A large amount of our work was in the harbours, because Moji, the town we went to, is at one of the entrances to the inner sea, and there's a lot of shipping. And we used to do a lot of work with cement. The Japanese were shipping the cement out to all their various possessions, and these were in the sort of international half underweight bags. And cement is something that I personally don't like working on because it's dusty and dirty. And we used to fill 10,000 ton ships full of cement. And a 10,000 empty ship almost looks like a dance hall. Enormous holds. And I personally used to work with a particular Japanese who was very strong. And we eventually got to a stage when I could load these bags about 11 high. They just come down in slings and then just load it off through. We'd do this all day long. With about perhaps a couple of breaks in which you have sort of a rice ball, which is a triangular ball, probably containing 1.5 pound of rice, I suppose, and some pickled daikons, which are, really is a pickled radish. Quite pleasant as such, but at least it was food. But you came back absolutely, you know, top to toe in cement, you know, and awful stuff. But we always did have the benison of these nice warm baths, which was something. And there was no shortage of water again in Japan, so that you could scrub your clothes and sort of, you know, keep them clean. We didn't seem to have much in the way of changing uniform. I think we had a summer uniform, which was Japanese, and a winter one, which was lined and was a better one. And the very rough type of boots, the rough side outside and the smooth side inside, which eventually the Americans copied because this was sensible. You had to worry about sort of polishing them, but they were much more comfortable. And the Japanese, in lots of ways, are sort of very practical people, as such. The climate in Kyushu was pleasant. You could get into shorts, something like March, right through to October. But the winters were quite comparable to England. They were quite sort of cold, although we had these Japanese clothes. I mean, it was bearable, but not pleasant. We were in this camp in Moji for some long civil time. And at first, we would sort of work on the shipping when it was there, and when there wasn't shipping, we could have their Yasmi, YASMY, which simply means rest, rest days. But one, I think we had changed accommodation about three times, rather got onto this, and then they used to use us as slave labour, so we got hired out and working on anything else which was around, you know. So he was sort of wearing them out quite a bit. We also worked on a big railway warehouse system, and there they were transporting sugar. This was caster sugar, and the reason for this was that the Japanese were short of petrol and oil, so they were converting caster sugar into alcohol. And this was packed in 100 kilo bags,